Brought to you by a grant from the Old White Man Cabal. We're also responsible for the quality recording of this episode.
Objection! Greetings and welcome to another episode of Objection, the worldwide leader in contrarian a-holery. Brought to you as always by BBD Brick. I am Judge Dan Mancini, and joining me, as always, is Judge David Johnson.
Yeah, I apologize in advance. My call quality is a little iffy. I think
You're in a bunker tonight, right?
What's that? I am in a bunker.
You're in a bunker tonight.
I think New Hampshire is under cyber attack. It's threat level orange. Threat level midnight. That's what it is.
You've got something across the old white man cabal.
The old white man cabal is not happy at all. I'll be sending assassins my way.
Yes. Stay safe. Eat Hormel chili, Twinkies, yes. Everything else that you have in there.
Yep. I'll boil my urine and drink it if I have to.
So this is a momentous episode because we've been doing our countdown of the top 20 action movies despised by Prius enthusiasts, and we're now to the top 10.
Yeah,
so after a couple digressions, we're down into the bottom half of the list. So your thoughts on the list so far?
I think it's eclectic, so that's nice. So. I guess we should recap. You said you were the one who does a show prep in this tandem. So have you done a list thus far?
Yes, I do. Number 20 was Band of Brothers. 19 was Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. 18 was a threefer, the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Not bad. Which was, the whole trilogy was on sale at Blu-ray at Target this Black Friday. Like $8 I saw. It must have been a price misprint, but.
Wow, for all three movies?
Yeah, $76 off. Like, what? But anyway,
yeah.
That's another consumer digression.
Yes. 17, which I think you can also get for $8 on Blu-ray, was Commando. 16 was Black Dynamite. 15, the last good movie made by James Cameron, True Lies.
Yes.
14, La License to Kill.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite Bond movies.
13, Apocalypto. 12, the greatest movie starring at least a dozen mustaches, Tombstone. And then one of our modern entries, The Expendables, at number 11. So I don't know, you can recap qualifies as a movie that a Prius enthusiast would hate?
Absolutely. Just kind of ticking down the movies that really just feature that kind of counter-mamby-pamby hero. So,
yeah.
You could be a Prius enthusiast, and maybe you're totally on board with us, and you love John Matrix. That's why we're not trying to hit holes.
Right, and that's why the internet exists for broad generalities.
Absolutely. So you know when you see it. You know the movie.
It will offend
the people with the delicate.
Exactly. So let's dive into the bottom half of this. This is an interesting show, not only because we're moving into the top 10, and these are movies where we've actually taken the time to make our top 10 list as opposed to coming up with the movies like 30 seconds before
the show. Movies right before hitting record. As we climb towards number one, I mean, they're going to be really rich in the holy, rich in that alpha type of take the fight to the bad guy. I mean, again, these are. You'd probably be able to probably know if you're the movies or the direction we're heading, but I think there'll be some surprises as well.
Yeah. And I think we have some good balance shows where, these movies will be sort of thematically, they're paired up nicely. You will be able to tell with this episode, which deals with, at least in the main list, our first two, I guess both of them could be considered animated, right?
Yeah, I would say so.
So we'll dive in, but before we do, let's introduce our guest a-hole, although I shudder to use that phrase because, now I'm going to get like the worst imaginable screeners next week for saying that. But we welcome Chief Justice Michael Staley.
Hello. Well, I think you already, didn't you just do the Santa pause thing? I think that was painful enough.
Yeah, that was painful. You know, and I didn't think it was going to be that painful. You know, I'm kind of, I can deal with the family fare, but I mean, when there was like 20 or 30 minutes left and the kids left the room, abandoned me to it, I thought, oh man, this is, I'm in trouble here.
Oh boy.
And I've got the daughter who saved Christmas. Or
that's
something
right,
like
you
that.
Do. Yes.
Sorry, Paris Hilton and Mario Lopez.
Oh, it's Christmas fun for everyone.
Absolutely. Thank you, Michael. We appreciate it.
You're
we appreciate
welcome.
That.
Share the love. Yeah.
Nothing says Christmas like Paris Hilton.
That's right. When I think of the season of renewal and forgiveness and optimism, hope. I think of crack shots with no panties.
Oh, man. All right, so let's dive into the substance here. So number 10 on our list is Team America from the folks who brought us South Park,
yes,
of course.
Mr. Trey Parker and Matt Stone.
Yes. Yes.
Well, Michael, what do you think? Do you want to kick this off?
This is one of those movies that split a lot of people, and I can understand. I mean, it was just, you know, you guys were talking about The Expendables last time, but this is another one of those movies that's just kind of makes no apologies for what it's trying to say. And it takes pot shots at everybody from Kim Jong-il to the Screen Actors Guild.
That's right. The Film Actors Guild.
Yeah, the Film Actors Guild.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like intercontinental ballistic missile strikes more than pot shots.
Yeah, this is true.
I mean, they just go after, I mean, I don't know how those guys, I remember hearing maybe a commentary from them once about being at a Hollywood cocktail party or something. So I can't imagine those guys get a lot of invites.
No, but I think, you know, when the thing went down with Isaac Hayes and the whole Church of Scientology,
right,
and they just pretty much said, you know, we're an equal opportunity offender. We don't
yeah,
you know, not offend anybody. So whether it be the Mormon Church or the Lutherans or the Scientologists or whoever, you know, we're going after everybody.
Or their own network.
Including themselves, right.
But, I mean, for me, I mean, I'm not going to say Team America was hilarious. I think there were some very funny parts, but I think for me it was more of just the spectacle of this puppet theater. And I just kind of really, I mean, towards the end there, they were just bringing it to, you know, the Hollywood types, probably the humorless Hollywood types who take themselves, you know, that, you know, ultra seriously. And, I mean, they were these guys, which is, I mean, the Matt Damon gag is kind of legendary now, isn't
yeah.
that?
Yes.
I mean, you've got, doesn't Janine Garofalo's face melt? You know, Michael Moore, the suicide bomber. I mean, you can tell they just don't care about that, you know?
No.
Sometimes
yeah.
you get a feeling people care. They don't care what people think of them. I don't think they, and that was refreshing too. It's like, wow.
I mean, there's a lot of kind of under the radar stuff in terms of what they normally do, where most of their comedy is in the dialogue a lot of times in South Park. There's a lot of stuff going on visually in Team America that's just really hilarious. You know, just seeing puppets set up in these shots that mimic Michael Bay shots so perfectly.
Right.
That's right.
It's just absolutely hilarious. And just the stuff like, you know, talk about slamming Hollywood, the stuff where, like, if you show Paris, then you have to have the Eiffel Tower with, like, Paris written underneath it, you know. You wouldn't
That's
know,
right.
or you know, if it's London, then you have to have the shot of Big Ben as the establishing shot. You know, I mean, that kind of stuff is just absolutely hilarious throughout it.
And they have a whole song dedicated to how much Pearl Harbor sucks, right?
Yes, they yeah. do.
They do.
And we're all too young for the whole Thunderbirds thing, you know,
right.
with the puppets. So we kind of missed
right.
out on that. But so it's operating on two levels. It's making fun of that whole genre of kids' television. And then, you know, taking their normal anti-stance on everything from politics to Hollywood to weird kinky fetishes in the bedroom. I've never seen a puppet poop on another puppet before.
Yeah, that you know, that part of it. Kind of crossed the line. That and the vomiting, the endless vomiting.
That's a Prius owner right there.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean,
well, it's just so funny that people get offended.
That.
You know, it's just so funny that people get offended because, like you say, they are such equal opportunity offenders that it's sort of ridiculous to, you know, sort of pick and choose, laugh at the stuff that you want to see skewered and then get mad when they kind of pee in your own Cheerios, you know. I mean, they've certainly peed in my Cheerios, where if I was an easily offended person, I would have been offended. But, you know, they're just so – they're so relentless toward everyone.
I mean, one of my favorite
– mad at, you know.
One of my favorite, you know, bits in that movie is just the theme song, which actually pokes fun at kind of a jingoistic attitude. But I just, yeah, I mean, it's just so great, you know, the America F.E.S. song. That is great.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
But, I mean, I still think that that movie probably is most notorious just for the steaming deuce it takes on so many, you know, self-important celebrity mouthpieces.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the Martin Sheen, Tim Robbins stuff is really funny, too. They're playing guards.
And speaking of Prius enthusiasts, I mean, who could forget the South Park episode dedicated to the Prius?
That's true, where they all love the smell of their own farts. Yep.
That's right. I love that, you know, the animation that has the driver's faces, you know. Hello, hi there, you know, just that douchey face. It's perfect.
Oh. Oh man, hilarious! So yeah, I think it. I think Team America is a well-deserved number 10 on this
Agreed.
List. And if that's number 10, then you can just imagine what's coming up in weeks to come, because it does get progressively more offensive to your average Prius enthusiast from here on. Although maybe this next one's arguable. These two probably could have been reversed, but you know, I think this works. And we're going sort of the opposite end of the animation spectrum with number 9 into the Disney realm, or at least Pixar. At the time, when they made this, I don't think they were Disney, were they?
No, they hadn't merged yet.
Okay.
They were still under the original Pixar contract.
Right. And so the number 9 is The Incredibles.
Yeah.
To me, the most entertaining. I don't know that it's the most accomplished Pixar, but the most entertaining to me.
You know, I mean, well, they continue to one-up themselves. I mean, by the time we're getting to WALL-E and, you know, just the visuals and the storytelling, you know, up, it just, it goes to another level. But there's something about The Incredibles that still holds up in terms of, you know, again, we talk about spoofing different genres, but I think this was more of Brad Bird's homage to the 60s spy genre.
Yeah.
And just the subtleties with which he did it was just astounding.
Oh, man, that's great.
The whole Sean
so your
Connery
thoughts, Dave,
type villain islands that, you know, with the volcano.
Yeah. Yeah. With like the mod architecture and stuff. Really nice. So your thoughts, Dave, on why this would offend a Prius owner.
I think it's one of these movies that you may not, you know, if you did fall into our broad category of, you know, so serious and being a killjoy, I suppose you could probably watch and grab and have a good time and move along with it. But like, what's mainly about The Incredibles is there's a lot of stuff bubbling beneath the surface that really runs kind of counter to but kind of the stuff that we're, you know, that we're kind of attacking in our, you know, in our action movies these days, our nuanced, mamby-pamby stuff. Like, for one thing, it's a small element, but it's, they don't want Dash to beat all the kids in the race, right? Remember that?
Right.
You know, they don't want to do that, and then, you know, I think, what's the line? Like, I think mom or dad say, you know, everybody is special or something like that. And he just says, that means nobody is. You know,
right.
I mean, that's a very loose paraphrase, but it's it kind of attacks that self-esteem-oriented push, you know, like, hey, it's okay if, you know, you don't do your homework as long as you feel good about yourself. And as someone who taught, you know, high school for a little bit, taught some high school English and was dealing with that, kind of the after effects of that experiment that happened in the middle school for a while. It's like, yeah, this is not ideal, I think. So that whole, you know, the whole everybody is a superstar type of mentality, I thought that was kind of cleverly skewered in The Incredibles. You know, even the name itself, The Incredibles, like, the family themselves are exceptional. You know, they are, you know, that's celebrated. You know, and they do end up celebrating that. You know, that, I think that's quite obvious, one of the themes that, you know, Brad Bird is doing. In fact, that kind of carries over to my favorite Pixar movie and my favorite Brad Bird movie, which is Ratatouille. You know, you see that theme in Ratatouille as well.
That's true. And, you know, that the thing with Dash is actually, echoed with Syndrome the villain, because his big plan is to use technology to give everybody powers. And,
yeah.
He basically says, and then when everybody's super, nobody will be.
That's right, right.
So
you know, and you know, other little things, too, like they become very proactive heroes towards the end, you know?
Yeah.
You know, they're the ones who kind of just take the fight, you know, where it needs to be. So whether they're breaking out of the prison, you know, or, you know, getting after the super robot there, you know, again, they're not a reactive bunch, you know, and they're working together and they're just kind of bringing the pain as one unit in a very aggressive way. I mean, the reason that there weren't really any heroes running around, like a lot of lawsuits and stuff that popped up, right?
Well, that's it. I mean, it's the whole thing is set up as an anti-establishment
right.
kind of rant right. in that they were forced underground or in the closet for the fact that, you know, somebody was injured accidentally while they were trying to save, and then they started, you know, we became the litigious society.
Yes,
no matter
yes.
what kind of good people try to do, somebody's always there to pin blame on somebody else for it.
Yeah, that's right, that's true. So the trial lawyers don't come across looking that great in these kind of trials.
No.
Well, and neither does the man, so to speak. In a way, it may be Pixar's own slap at artists versus the 9-to-5ers.
Mm-hmm.
Here we have an opportunity to create things, but if we're forced into this type of box cutter cubicle world where we're nothing but, you know, gophers and mindless drones, that we lose that creativity. And that was the whole thing with him working at the insurance company, and he couldn't do anything to help people because it was against the rules.
That's right.
Right. He had to be completely mindless.
I was just going to say, when they're making their escape from the island, it still kind of surprises me how a lot of the bad guys die.
Yeah, there's some nice explosions and stuff. And,
yeah. They explode and die at the hands of, like, you know, some 15-year-old kids.
Yeah.
Well, and Syndrome winds up knocking off all the heroes along the way before he gets to Mr. Incredible. So you have the death of all these other heroes.
Yeah, it's not very watered down.
No, they don't shy away and go into that Saturday morning territory where it's just laser blasts that knock people unconscious or something.
Yeah, Brad Bird's usually pretty good for bringing it. And I mean, he's a guy who kind of understands that little kids can handle that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, they see it in video games and stuff every day, so.
Right.
And, of course, you know, we'd be remiss in saying how, you know, another big thing that Dan and I have kind of taken on, you know, with this countdown is kind of pushing back against that caricature of the idiot, dopey father/husband.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And obviously, Mr. Incredible here is not that, you know? He's, and again, you could see that, you know, each of their powers are kind of connected to their personalities. You know, into the kind of the roles that they all inhabit, you know. But, you know, it's very obvious that it's incredible. He is kind of like this protector, the strong, you know, he wants to be the strong and the protector. In fact, it's a little deficiency because, you know, he does realize that, you know, he needs his wife, you know, as a partner to help him. And that's, you know, that's good. But he's definitely not a dope. You know, he's not a dope. He's not blowing himself up with a microwave like we see in the, you know, in those infomercials.
No, but they are kind of set up to be that way with he and Frozone early on, where they're forced to, you know, to go out for poker or bowling in the evening in order to try and stop bank robberies and things like that.
Right, that's true. Right, so they want to do that stuff, but you're right, they are being kind of constrained by the bureaucracy that's contained them. So
and then held responsible when it goes wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So they have to sort of pretend to be dolts.
Right.
And then, you know, go out, do their thing, be proactive, even when they're doing it in secret.
And when Mr. Incredible falls short, you know, when he does mess up, it's not because he's, you know, a goofy idiot or whatever. You know, he's trying too hard. You know, he's trying too hard to do the right thing. And, you know, his wife really kind of reorients him and, you know, and says, hey, I'm your partner in this. I'm here to help you with this. You know, we're together. We're a team. So it's not like, oh, you're just such a... You're just such an ineffectual loser. You know,
they have to rescue you. You're behind again.
We have to rescue you again. You know, you're just a pathetic excuse for a husband and a father. You know, it's not that way. It's kind of, it celebrates that the partnership and the teamwork of the marriage and it doesn't denigrate either of them, actually, obviously. And that's something rare, too. You know, that's always nice to see.
Indeed, it is. So, I think we've covered both pretty well. Number 10, Team America. Number 9, The Incredibles. I think both are worthy additions to the list.
Definitely. We should probably say that the family films end here, don't you think?
Yeah.
Going forward, there's not going to be a lot of movies that are going to be family-friendly on this list, so be prepared.
No, they end with The Incredibles. Not that Team America's family-friendly. Unless you don't mind your 8-year-old, seeing a pearl necklace. personally, that does not qualify as family friendly.
Right.
At Seedy House, but, to each his own, I guess.
So I'm guessing you're not sitting Luke down to watch this movie anytime soon.
No.
Actually, there's probably, maybe one or two movies on this entire list that would, that would qualify as a family friendly adventure. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, we have talked about doing that Dora the Explorer show.
Oh, God.
Goodness, Yeah, maybe the top 5 kids shows that were forged in the depths of hell.
That would potentially be number 1.
That would be. So you get some strong competition from the Doodle Pops, if I can say that much.
Yeah.
Yes, you can say that.
Yes, it would.
Wait, Lionsgate on line 1. Excuse me for a minute.
That's right. Well, that's pretty good, Dan. We're really in the home stretch. I can see the light at the end of the tunnel. And that light is a giant explosion.
It is, and it's moving our way. So I think that covers it. Anything else left to say?
Well, thank you, Michael, for joining us. And, man, thank you. 10 points easy.
We've got a job to do. Let's go police the world!